The date of March 8th was formalized during the Russian Revolution when the demand for bread and peace was chanted by women.
We should get more black women of color in leadership positions. Mm-hmm. It is so crucial for our labor movement. We have to be at that table. We have to be able to claim our space.
We have literally been going to barbershops, grocery stores, beauty shops, neighborhood corners, gas stations, everywhere where people frequent, and just having these important conversations of why unions matter.
It was a breathtaking moment. We all shed tears. It was tears of joy.
A lot of our clients are saying, you know, I can't believe you've been treated this way. I love your class. You're obviously an asset. I won't stand for this either. You know, keep going.
It's a way to get young children and our younger generation to recognize what plumbing has done for mankind.
Welcome to the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, our roundup of highlights from some of the more than 100 shows that make up the Labor Radio Podcast Network. On today's show, the PRO Act, International Women's Day, community support for the Amazon Union Organizing Drive, Fitness Workers Unite in Washington, D.C., and World Plumbing Day. We start off with my report in Union City Radio about the passage of the PRO Act in the U.S. House of Representatives. Then, we've got three reports around International Women's Day, from Radio Labor, KABU Labor Radio, and from the brand new Solidarity Center podcast, Ending Gender-Based Violence at Work. The Heartland Labor Forum this week talked to members of the Bamazon Community Organizing Team, who have been working hard to support the Amazon Workers Organizing Drive. And on Monday Morning QB, a report on efforts to organize a union by fitness instructors in Washington, D.C. We wrap up this week's show with a report on something most of us would probably rather not think about, but we all need, and that's plumbing. America's Workforce Radio celebrates World Plumbing Day with the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters. I'm Chris Garlock for the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Here's the show.
Welcome to Union City Radio for Thursday, March 11th. In a historic moment in the struggle for working people's rights on the job, the House of Representatives on Tuesday passed the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, also known as the PRO Act, the most wide-ranging pro-worker rewrite of labor law since the original National Labor Relations Act of 1935, now goes to the Senate, where fierce opposition from business and Republicans is expected. Everyone deserves the basic protections and dignities that come with a union card, said AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka. The day the PRO Act is signed into law, tens of millions more working people will finally be free to carry that power in our pockets. Today's labor quote is by President Joe Biden, who said, "I believe every worker deserves a free and fair choice to join a union, and the PRO Act will bring us closer to that reality. I urge Congress to send it to my desk so we can summon a new wave of worker power and create an economy that works for everyone."
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor report recorded on Tuesday, March 9th, 2021. I'm Mark Belanger. As unionists organized events to celebrate International Women's Day on March 8th, there were warnings that the day is being over-commercialized and its roots in the international labor movement forgotten. Instead of messages about the need for equal wages and decent working conditions for women, there were ads about discounts on cookingware, women's clothing, flowers, and chocolates. The progressive news service NewsClick, based in India, prepared a report about the situation. Here's NewsClick producer Neelam Gaur about the commercial messages such as discounted cosmetics being used to supposedly celebrate International Women's Day.
if you have been getting these messages since the past few days, by now you will know that International Women's Day is March 8. For over a century, March 8 has been celebrated as International Women's Day. This year marks the 110th year of celebration. So, what exactly does this day mean and how did it come into existence? As per the International Women's Day's official website, International Women's Day is a global day celebrating the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. But this definition is far from the image that we see today around us in this day and age of consumerism, which glosses over the struggle behind getting women basic rights such as right to vote and equal wages. The origin of the day lies in the labor movements that were taking place in the early 20th century in the US and Europe. In 1908, about 15,000 women in New York marched through the city to mark their presence against working conditions. These women mainly were part of an organized industry, used to get very low wages than their male counterparts, and were placed in the lower ranks despite their hard work. Most women in these protests were part of Garment Workers Union. Their demands were simple. They were asking for shorter working hours, better pay, and voting rights. It is interesting to notice that today what we know as a feminist movement has its origin in the labor movements in the past. The next year, in 1909, the Socialist Party of America observed the first International Women's Day on February 28th. This was changed to March 8 in 1913. Why? Let me tell you an interesting story of well-known feminist Clara Zetkin, famously known as the grandmother of German communism. She was the first one who tabled the idea that every country should celebrate this day on the same date to press their demands for equal rights for women. Zetkin tabled this idea at a conference in Copenhagen, Denmark, attended by 100 women from 17 countries, including unions, socialist parties, Working Women's Club, and female legislators. Her suggestion was welcomed by everyone, and the result was International Women's Day. The date of March 8th was formalized during the Russian Revolution, when the demand for bread and peace was chanted by women. These demonstrations of women renounced the then Tsar of Russia, and the provisional government granted women the rights to vote. The United Nations finally made this day official in 1975. So why did a day which became a wake-up call to accelerate gender parity and has such a radical origin turn into another advertisement tool for market forces? In today's scenario, International Women's Day has been stripped out of its history. A day that started with the movements for women's rights and equality has become a tool for luring women to stay caged in their own worlds, the contours of which have been drawn by a patriarchal mindset. As a result, we have discounts on clothing lines or beauty products or cookware as ways to empower women, especially the educated urban ones. Instead, shouldn't we be talking about equal politics, social and economic rights for women who hold up half the sky?
And that's it, International Labor News You Can Use. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
Waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. Tonight, I'm joined by my sister in the struggle.
Hi, I'm Dr. Audrey Torrell.
Our guest tonight is Denise Berkley. She's one of our national CBTU activists, the chairwoman of the CBTU Women's Committee. Sister Berkley has 46 years and counting of history of as a union activist in the state of New York, where she serves as the CSEA Executive Vice President. On March 8th, 2021. That is the date of the celebration for International Women's Day. In today's world, how do you go about keeping women active?
The big part is really mentoring, reaching out, talking, listening. I want to say as a leader, you have to be a good listener. Listening to find out what do they want to do in the union movement? How can we encourage them and get them to move from shop steward to local representative, to a local president representative? In our union, we have region and statewide. Mm-hmm. To have them to be able to go from one goal, one channel to the next. Mm-hmm. And having them have a place, a safe space, a brave space, any way you want to say it, where they can be comfortable to be able to learn as much as they can. And we have to help them out financially, mm-hmm. how to run for office. Mm-hmm. And we have to help them out in techniques on how do you move from one level to another. But giving them all of the information that they need. Mm-hmm. And understanding that they have families, they have other obligations, and how we can work with them. Mm-hmm. We have to encourage and get more Black women of color in leadership positions. Mm-hmm. It is so crucial for our labor movement. We have to be at that table. We have to be able to claim our space. We have to be able to use our voices. Very important.
Yes.
That was going to be my next concern, is right now, when you look at the labor movement, what are older white guys? And you talked critically about how important it is to have a mentor. And yes. I'm not saying that older white guys can't be a mentor, but we all understand the significance of having someone who looks like you, who thinks like you,
yes.
be your mentors. And so
yes.
if they're not in the leadership role, it makes it that hill that much higher. So how do you get around that?
I have mentoring right now quite a few Black women.
Mm-hmm.
One, encouragement. The second part, for them to believe in their strength and how to operate in the avenue and the union movement to what exists now. Also, be in that space for them that you are teaching reaching back. They need to have Black women to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that white men cannot be mentors, because you do need that also.
Mm-hmm.
But we have shared experiences. We know the obstacles that you're going to be dealing with. We know how we can help you navigate so you don't fall into some traps that they need out there.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to help them move from the different levels of the levels of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So important. So important. And that's part of what we speak about with CVTU, the National Women's Committee, to empower women to have a space where you can be healed, to have a space that you can learn how to run for a union election. How do I make a resolution? How do I speak on a mic at a convention? How do I run for something in the community? All of that, because we're all connected. We need women leadership, and we've seen it. Look what happened with the election this year.
Mm-hmm.
With Black being so instrumental, we have to have that within the labor movement also.
Sure.
That same fire, that same push also.
Yeah, I think they're coining it as black girl magic.
Yes. Yes. We need that Black girl magic within the labor movement.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Again, Sister Berkeley, I want to thank you for putting a pause on your life in order to join us tonight for our recognition of not only Women's Day, but also Black History Month.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
It was wonderful to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. What a blessing, Tina. And Audrey, I'm doing my little virtual hug. What a blessing, my sister.
Thank you. Thank you.
Received and sent back.
Yes.
Hello, brothers and sisters, and welcome to the very first episode of the Solidarity Center podcast, an interview show that highlights and celebrates the individuals working for labor rights, the freedom to form unions, and democracy across the globe. I'm your host, Shauna Bader Blau. I'm also the executive director of the Solidarity Center, the largest international worker rights organization in the United States. One of the most rampant forms of human rights violations involve sexual harassment and other forms of gender-based violence. And that's why the labor movement led by union women is determined to end gender-based violence and harassment at work. Today, we are talking with one of those activists, Brenda Modise.
Good afternoon, colleagues. My name is Brenda Modise. I'm the Social Policy and Gender Officer for the Federation of Unions of South Africa, FEDUSA.
Brenda, you and I know each other most recently from our joint work around Convention 190 and the global fight against violence and harassment in the world of work. And I wanted to ask you, what is Convention 190 and why is it important?
Convention 190 is one of the tools that will assist us in terms of making sure the world of work are protected. And it will also assist countries with tools to be able to deal with gender-based violence. If the convention is implemented very well by countries, it will actually give us a better platform to deal with gender-based violence in the world of work. And Convention 190 will cover existing gaps in all national legislations that we have in our own countries.
I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what is violence and harassment in the world of work?
Well, I would say violence and harassment in the world of work will also include sexual harassment. We're all talking about gender because we think violence and harassment does not only happen to women only. It happens on all workers, irrespective of your gender. In terms of sexual harassment, it was also leaned towards women. But with this convention, we're trying to address violence that is geared towards workers. It doesn't matter whether you are a man, a woman, old, young, LGBTQI community, or anyone, but we are addressing violence and harassment in the world of work against all workers.
Are there particular sectors in South Africa that you have observed violence and harassment affecting workers disproportionately?
Yes, there would be, even though all sectors will be affected or impacted by violence and harassment in the world of work. But there are those that are very key in this instance, your retail workers, your health sector workers. In South Africa, we had recorded cases where the retail industry, they normally knock off very late at night and they have to travel from work to home, and employers do not provide transport for workers to be able to go home. So the transport that they use, it's not safe. They are normally violated in the taxis, they are violated in the trains, or any transport that they would use. But in the case of the health workers, is that the space that they are working in, it's also not safe, as sometimes they would be raped in the hospital by patients, or sometimes they would be raped on their way to and from work.
Does Convention C-190 address transportation and other locations that workers are present beyond just the workplace?
Yes, it does, especially the fact that the convention does not talk about workplace, but it talks about world of work. So it means that workers transiting from and to work, they will be protected either by the employer or by government. And in that way, there should be policies or legislation that will guide in terms of how should employers and government regulate that space.
You were there in Geneva. Can you tell me about that? Like, what was that moment like?
It was a breathtaking moment. We all shed tears. It was tears of joy. Because remember, when we went into that room as workers of the world, we knew what we wanted, but we didn't know if the business constituency of the world understand where we are coming from. Because they thought workers wanted more responsibility towards the protection of workers, but it was not really the case. And when the chairperson said, we now have the convention, and he hit that, and we all sang, and it was for the first time that in the in UN you would have a singing, and the noise that we had as workers, it was only the workers' side.
You know, I remember in Geneva that the bloc of African nations were very united as governments in support of a strong convention and recommendation on eliminating violence and harassment in the world of work. And I remember also the labor movement was, of course, the most joyous and absolutely broke out in song.
We are ready for the convention. We are ready for convention. Yeah, that's the song. Yes, that's the song.
If you think like 5 years from now or 10 years from now, what does success look like to you? What is the future of work that inspires you?
The future of work that inspires me, it's a workplace free of violence and harassment. It's a workplace that one would go in and be able to work freely without thinking about her domestic violence issues or harassment in the world of work. I'm thinking about a decent work and decent life for all that will make sure that workers are protected in terms of salary, environment, and everything. So for me, it's a workplace free of violence and harassment, irrespective of men or women, young or old.
Thanks one more time to my guest, Brenda Modise, the Social Justice Officer at the Federation of Unions of South Africa. You can learn more about South Africa's campaign to ratify Convention 190 at c190can.org and on social media at C190CAN. For the Solidarity Center podcast, I'm Shauna Bader Blau. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Ooh, mountains. We gon' walk it out and ooh, mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. Silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we would take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. The song you've just heard is Rise Up by Andra Day. She wrote the song as a prayer for herself during a difficult time, but the rousing song resonated widely with activist communities after its 2015 release. The Black Lives Matter movement in particular adopted this. Tonight, our topic is the organizing drive by Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama. We're going to see the organizing drive through the activities of a community support team by the name of Bamazon Community Organizing Team, or BCOT. Our guests tonight are members of the BCOT team, Eric Hall and Haley Zarsnick, and we have a special guest, a union organizer, Mike Foster. Welcome, Haley, Eric, and Mike.
Hey, welcome. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Thank you so much for coming. So what is the Bamazon organizing team?
So our team came together a little over a month ago to try and see what we could do as community organizations to support the union drive. And we have created a couple of different forums where we can bring people together and trying to prioritize us from the union. We have done a couple of different things, from organizing canvassing, trying to organize getting messages of support from the community, and trying to make support in the community more visible. So that's a lot of the goals of our canvassing. And we think that last part's really important, because talking to people in the communities where workers live, we've been able to get signs up of support in people's yard. We've heard and collected people's stories about why they're pro-union, and we've just been able to make a lot of good happen. So it's been a great experience to be part of BCOT.
So what organizations are part of the Bamazon organizing team? What groups comprise this coalition?
As far as the community support arm, that consists of several local grassroots organizations, to include Our Revolution Birmingham chapter, the Democratic Socialists of America Birmingham chapter, SWEET, which is an energy company, also Greater Birmingham Ministries, Black Lives Matter Birmingham chapter, and I think that's about it. It's about six organizations, but it's literally comprised of community organizers, people who live in the city limits or stay within the county limits, that really just want to see change take place. And we're really on the ground every day to create a better Alabama and make life better for our community members. And yeah, those are the organizations that's on the ground. And of course, we have national support. Definitely have to acknowledge our national organizations who have been very supportive in our efforts. In organizing the group, I oftentimes make sure that everyone know that it's important that local lead and national organizations provide support. And so far, we have really been following the lead of RWDSU. We've been meeting with the organizers and the staff there daily, just to see how can we support. And so that support has ranged from, of course, as Haley mentioned, we've been canvassing, we've been providing security measures, just being an extra set of eyes for the staff members who are on the grounds or at the gates, making sure that they're safe. We've been doing a lot as it relates to just providing that education component regarding why unions matter, why unions are important. We realize that a lot of younger generation really didn't understand the importance and the relevance of having unions. And so we have literally been going to barbershops, grocery stores, beauty shops, neighborhood corners, gas stations, everywhere where people frequent, and just having these important conversations of why unions matter. And we feel really comfortable. We feel good. And we're looking forward to having a union come March 30th.
The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Keith Washburn.
There is no disgrace in standing side by side with working people, sweating for an honest wage. I'll never be ashamed of. So take it in stride.
This is Monday Morning QB. A year of pandemic has reshaped our social movements, maybe permanently. The labor movement is no exception, with worker concerns over health and safety driving new organizing throughout the last year. One group leading the charge is a union of fitness trainers right here in the district. Reporter Chris Banker-Drowns has that story.
Solid Core is a boutique fitness company with dozens of locations across the country, including 24 studios in the DC metro region. It's a young, rapidly growing franchise, so when Mayor Muriel Bowser announced Phase 2 reopening in June of last year, Solid Core scrambled to welcome clients back. But Solid Core fitness trainers weren't as keen on the idea, at least not without health and safety protections.
It was very clear at the time that COVID was the most aggressive issue that we needed to try and find a way to rectify and make sure that not only ourselves, but the families of the clients we were teaching every day were remaining safe and okay during the pandemic.
That's Rachel Hornstein, a former trainer and organizer with the Solid Core United Union Campaign. The campaign sent a letter to Solid Core executives a week after Phase 2 reopening was announced, demanding safety measures like a mask mandate, physical distancing, contact tracing, proper ventilation, and more. But poor COVID protocols weren't the only complaints fielded by another former trainer and Solid Core United organizer, Emily Collinson.
However, I have this issue regarding my pay, or I have this issue regarding management. And so we realized that there was definitely a desire for a broader sweeping change, and that, you know, we'd already kind of laid the groundwork for adding on to our COVID list of demands with other things.
In the course of Emily's work, talking with and organizing fellow trainers, she was fired. But rather than give up the fight, she contacted a lawyer and filed a number of charges with the National Labor Relations Board over unfair termination and coercive behavior. Talking to the lawyer helped Emily realize just how much potential illegal activity Solid Core had engaged in. For example,
you know, telling coaches that you, if you feel unsafe, if you feel like your health is at risk, you know, don't talk to anybody but this one person about it. And that's apparently also unlawful. So we'll see where these charges lead. They've been filed for about 7 months now, and it seems as though the case is wrapping up. But we're definitely hopeful that at least, you know, some of these will be recognized as having merit.
The NLRB charges help to legitimize the campaign and galvanize support from trainers and from clients too, as Rachel Hornstein explains.
A huge amount of support from clientele, from not only the Solid Core community, but the larger boutique fitness community of clients and instructors, in that the industry has been under a weird spell where the contractors and the coaches and the instructors have had their own weird set of rules in the fitness industry and have been exploited for many years. And a lot of our clients are saying, you know, I can't believe you've been treated this way. I love your class. You're obviously an asset. I won't stand for this either. You know, keep going.
Emily Collinson says Solid Core United's organizing work opened the eyes of clients and shattered some myths about the industry.
There's been this glossy sheen over boutique fitness, and it's very like aesthetics-based. And there's often a lot of social clout that goes along with being a coach or being a client. And these classes are expensive as well. So for coaches to speak out and kind of, you dull that shine and say, you know, it's not all as rosy as it looks. We have all of these issues. We've seen clients really seem jarred by that. They're really shocked to know that there were no benefits, that the pay was below industry averages, and that, you know, management kind of treated people as disposable. And that really didn't mesh well with people's idea of what they thought their money was buying.
This community support has been key to the success of prior labor organizing efforts, including the teacher strike wave that swept the country in 2018.
At a larger scale, I personally hope that our work will make noise in the overall fitness industry, that this is just the beginning. There's obviously a ton of work left to do to change the narrative about what it means to be a fitness professional.
For Monday Morning QB, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America. Here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Let's go to line number one right now and welcome to the show Tom Bigley. Tom comes to us from the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters of the United States and Canada. And he is a busy guy. In fact, he's got a couple of titles. And today he's going to talk about World Plumbing Day. I didn't know there was a World Plumbing Day until I was going to link up with Tom Bigley today. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Flash. Happy World Plumbing Day. World Plumbing Day celebrated all over the world, probably a lot more than it is here in the States and Canada, but over the in Asia, in Australia especially, it's a very big day over there.
Tom, how long has World Plumbing Day been in effect?
It was established in 2010 as a way to recognize the contributions that plumbing made to modern-day society. And I guess these guys got together and were looking for ways to grow the organization. And they thought that we needed something to call our own. We established March 11th. Don't ask me why March 11th, but maybe there wasn't nothing happening on March 11th. But we've been doing it for 10 years, and we've had a lot of success with it. With poster contests, we sponsor a poster contest, an international poster contest, and the winner gets $100 and their school gets $1,000. I was in Germany about 4 years ago, and they had this poster contest at a art institute, and they displayed the posters at a art gallery, and there was a couple hundred people at the opening. And I tell you, some of these posters, they should have been in, they could have been sold for art. They were just amazing. It was incredible. It's a way to get young children and our younger generation to recognize, one, what plumbing has done for mankind, and also to them think about sustainable water and sanitation. That was one of the main reasons, but it just gives us recognition we've accomplished over the last couple hundred years.
That's awesome. Very good. You got a little competition on the date because it was a year ago today that the World Health Organization announced that the pandemic had started. So that's a little bit unfortunate for you. But nonetheless, you got to move forward and call attention to the fact that, hey, this
that.
Is.
Thanks, Flash.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not one day I'd like to be sharing with anybody, though.
No, it's not. No. And especially, at least we're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel here. OK, there were some bleak times in this past year. You know that. But We have to charge forward here. But so what is this going to entail for you? Do you have any traveling, any kind of like a virtual conferences going on to call attention to World Plumbing Day?
So we made a couple live videos that's on our website. And no, usually we do travel on World Plumbing Day, but we haven't traveled since the pandemic started. Usually we're in some place in the world. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been in Germany twice, in China twice, Poland, a couple different places that we have the poster event, and then we actually give the prizes out today to the winner. So it's a lot of fun, actually. I really enjoy it.
One more point here. I understand you're trying to tap into Navajo Nation in Arizona and New Mexico. The water situation there is not where it should be. Can you speak to that, Tom? What's the story there?
Sure. We partnered with an organization, iWish. It's all over the world. And what they do is they try to provide clean, sustainable water and proper sanitation to places that are unfortunately don't have that luxury. And one of the places right here in the United States is Navajo Nation. And we've been out there a few times the last 2 years, once in New Mexico and once in Arizona, where we get a bunch of volunteers to go out there and we put in bathrooms and septic systems and water cisterns to the Navajo Nation that doesn't have clean water, and they haven't for over 70, 80 years. They've never had it. And it's really, if you've seen it, you would be very humbled by the way they live. And it's very rewarding when we were able to provide that, those water stations for them. And since the pandemic, they've been hit very hard by the COVID-19 because they don't have clean water to bathe and clean their hands and things like that. So we have been building these wash stations in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We did a couple prototypes and we just finished them. They got approved by the Milwaukee School of Engineering, and we're going to start mass producing them, and then we're going to take them out and install them on the different in the different residences that are out on the reservations all over. It's a very big reservation. If you took that
their property. It's bigger than a lot of states in the United States. So it's very vast, and it's something that we find, our members find very rewarding, helping out fellow Americans.
So. That's what it's all about. Unions do a good job at that, I might add. All right, Tom, we're going to leave it on that. No, this is good. Good stuff here. I didn't realize today is World Plumbing Day. That's a start right there. And by the way, Tom Bigley, if you're just joining us right now, is chairman of the World Plumbing Council.
That's it for this edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, our roundup of highlights from some of the more than 100 labor radio shows and podcasts that make up the Labor Radio Podcast Network. We've got links to all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org, including complete versions of the shows you heard today. And you can also find them by using the hashtag LaborRadioPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly was edited by Patrick Dixon, Chris Bangert-Drowns, and myself, produced by me, and our social media guru, as always, is Harold Phillips. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Labor Radio Net. Find out more on our website at laborradionetwork.org. Be sure to check out our weekly live stream show available at Labor Radio Net on Facebook and Labor Radio Podcast Network YouTube, where you'll also find profiles of members of the network. For Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this is Chris Garlock, urging you to stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local Labor Radio Podcast show.